Good morning. I'm Mitch Wertlieb, and this is a special call-in hour on Vermont Public Radio. The United States Capitol was evacuated Wednesday after hundreds of pro-Trump extremists breached the building. The nation, indeed the world, watched as a symbol of democracy was overrun. As of this morning, five people have lost their lives as a result of the chaos as Trump flags supplanted American flags. Elected officials, including Vermont's Governor Phil Scott, Congressman Peter Welch, and Senators Leahy and Sanders, have all called for the resignation or the removal of the president, citing for inciting the insurrection.
It was a shocking attack on our democracy. And make no mistake, President Trump is responsible for fanning these flames.
I said the president, if he had any sense of decency, any sense of patriotism, any sense of concern for the country, he should resign immediately.
He is a dangerous, deranged man. And the right thing, as Patrick said, he'd resign. The second right thing would be the people around him who have the authority, like Vice President Pence, would invoke the 25th Amendment and get rid of him.
He incited people to invade the U.S. Capitol. As you've indicated, people died. What happens tomorrow? I don't know. You don't know. So I think the best bet right now is if we can get him out of office as quickly as possible.
Voices of Vermont's congressional delegation. Now, later on in the hour, we'll be speaking with former Vermont Governor Jim Douglas. We'll ask him about his reaction to all of this as an elected official and as a Vermont Republican to those riots that happened in Washington, D.C. But this hour is all about giving you some space to share your thoughts and reflections on what happened Wednesday in the nation's capital. What are you thinking? What are you feeling? What kinds of conversations are you having with your spouse, your partner, your children, your friends? There are still so many unanswered questions about what the nation experienced 2 days ago. Why were Capitol Police so unprepared for the mob? Why were pro-Trump extremists given free rein to move around the building? This hour, we don't have any new answers to those questions of why, but we are here to make some space for what. What's going on in your mind, in your heart? What's on the tip of your tongue? So after the events in Washington, VPR reached out to Vermonters to share their reflections on the events, and we did receive dozens of responses like this one from an anonymous listener in Chittenden County.
I think the way people are processing this is all over the board, but what really hit home for me was I work remotely, and I logged on to my work chat, and I read that the woman that had been shot had died, and a coworker chatted back, "Good." And it really hit home that this sort of behavior isn't just out of state. It's in Vermont. It's our coworkers. And some people are grieving, but some people are still, they're still angry. They're still desensitized. And I think it was a sense of hopelessness that this hate and malice can be everywhere.
We heard from Ron Jacobs in Winooski, who says he is especially disappointed in how the Capitol Police responded.
The occupation of the Capitol was no surprise. Trump has been encouraging his most fascist and fanatical followers ever since he decided to run for election in 2015. What's more surprising is the failure of the police to do much of anything until commanded to do so by outside authorities.
And we heard from Paul George Blazevich of White River Junction, who said Wednesday's events serve as a reminder that anti-democratic ideologies can happen right here in the United States, too.
It shows that those types of people, those people with the willingness to subvert democracy and that believe in racist ideologies and believe that doing something like that is okay, those people are in the Vermont community too. And we need to be able to watch out for these people with their very dangerous ideologies. And it's nerve-wracking to know that the president of the United States is the one that's egging them on and makes it seem like it's the okay thing to do.
Just some of the voices that we have already heard as we've asked you to share your thoughts and your feelings about what happened in the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday. And we are going to open the phone lines now again if you would like to join us today. Let's start out speaking with Mary, who's on the line from Winooski. Hi, Mary.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The thing that's been on my mind, I've been talking with my kids, obviously, and I'm also a member of a group that's examining the legacy of racism in the Episcopalian Church in Vermont. And what has come up a couple times is people saying how un-American it is that this happened. And it's really not. I mean, it can't be un-American if half of our country is at odds with the other half. It is apparently very American. Until we come to that understanding and start to examine why we're in this spot, this sort of thing is going to continue to happen. And in particular, looking at the, you know, which people have been talking about, the difference between the reaction of the police to these instigators versus the Black Lives Matter group. Until we look at that, we aren't going to heal the country.
Mary, I'm curious about what effect you think knowing history has on the way people feel about things now, because there is certainly, when you look back on it, I mean, one of the things that pro-Trump supporters like to talk about is make America great again. And what you're talking about here is the fact that we have a very difficult history, especially when it comes to race relations in this country. Do you think that if more Trump supporters knew or, you know, took the time to dig into that history, they might feel a little differently about things?
Yeah, you know, I think that the way that we've looked at our history is through rose-colored glasses. You know, we have a really very difficult history, and we haven't necessarily been great. There are certain things that we have hoped to be great, and we've had sort of the desire to do the things that we say we want to do in terms of justice and freedom and equality, but we haven't done those things. And we haven't acknowledged that when we are teaching history. So I think we need to take a real look at how we do teach what has gone on in this country for hundreds of years.
Mary, thank you very much for your phone call. I do appreciate it. Let's go to Elizabeth, who is on the line in Jericho. Hi, Elizabeth. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm going to build on what Mary said. I think that there have always been divisions in this country. What has made this presidency so dangerous is that the president himself is totally out of control. And I'm more interested in how can we, on a large scale, I think teaching history and civics is critical, but on a large scale, how can we prevent the president from a person to be elected president who gives voice to and encourages all the anger and the divisions that we've had? And the solution that I have come up with is that right now, we have only two qualifications to be president. You have to be 35, and you have to have been born in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to add a third, that anybody who runs for office, the office of president or vice president, must be able to pass the qualifications for the highest level of security. National security. President Trump couldn't have passed any of them. He didn't even pass the where are your taxes and may we see them test. So part of this is going to depend upon Congress to enforce looking at each individual candidate and making sure that that candidate can pass, has the qualifications to pass the highest security level. If everybody in the armed services has to, and in the rest of the government, has to abide by the levels of security to which they are qualified to learn about and speak to, the president certainly must be able to qualify for that. And this president wouldn't have. I mean, the taxes are one thing. His business deals are another. He is too easily... he would be too easily bribed and
compromised, I think, is what you're saying, Sarah.
It
sounds
compromised.
Like you're talking about an extensive kind of civics test, in a way, to show that you have enough information about how the American system of government works and you respect that system to become president.
Exactly. But that test is already written and already applied to everybody in governmental service.
All right.
So we're not inventing anything new. We're just saying that the person who is at the top of the governmental pyramid has to be able to pass the same test that everybody else has to pass.
Elizabeth, thank you very much for your call. I do appreciate it. Richard is on the line from South Newfane. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Quick comment. The Republican Party claims to be the party of law and order. There are some 18 Republican senators who are equally culpable to Mr. Trump, and over 100 representatives. They need to be held to account because I think they're equally as culpable as he is for what happened. If a puppy bites you and there's no repercussion, the puppy's going to bite again. And we need to look toward the future, especially Hawley and Cruz. They need to be held to account, probably censored. Thank you.
Thank you for the call, Richard. I do appreciate that. We've gotten some emails as well. We heard from Paul in Waterford who says, I have not heard discussed a test to the legal theory that a sitting president cannot be prosecuted for a federal crime. Trump should be arrested, says Paul. The case brought immediately before the Supreme Court. The immediate and unequivocal federal crimes are sedition and incitement to riot against the United States government. Thoughts of Paul in Westford. We are taking your calls today at 1-800-639-2211. Your thoughts and feelings on what happened in the Capitol on Wednesday. You can also email those thoughts to share@vpr.org. Let's go back to the phones now, and we have, the name is Azzolino, I think, on the line, calling from Binghamton, New York. I'm sorry if I got your name wrong.
No, it's Avellino. It's okay.
My apologies.
No problem. What I was trying to tell the secretary there is, if you listen to President Trump speak, there is nothing in that speech saying that you should riot. There's nothing in that speech. All he said was go there and support about the election. He didn't say anything about riots.
It's an interesting thought. I mean, I have heard other people say this as well, that he never explicitly said to those followers, go to the Capitol, break in, break windows, take over the building. You're certainly correct about that. Is it fair to say, though, that there was an incitement, there was a whipping up, there was a kind of pep rally for violence that the president must have known would occur? Because he did say, you have to be strong. We're not going to take our country back by showing weakness. You've got to fight. He did use the word fight. Now, those are not explicit directions to go and do what was done. But, sir, to be honest here, knowing the supporters and knowing what Trump had seen with events that happened in Charlottesville, Virginia, etc., did he not know that those kind of words and the effect that he has on the people who follow him so zealously could have that effect of violence?
It could have, but I don't believe in that. I believe what he meant, to be strong and stay together, fight together. What he meant is that we should stay, go there, support him. Not riot. If you look at the video, the people are pushing the people forward. Those people, they're not Trump supporters. I've been to a rally with Trump's rally. They're not supporters.
Well, who are they then? I'm just curious who they might be if they're not.
They're peaceful. They want our country to be strong. We want the jobs to come back to state, to America.
I understand those thoughts, sir, but you know that's not what we're talking about here. And you know, some of those people may have not gone into the building as we saw them do, but many did, and many were being violent, and 5 people died. I mean, there's no getting around those facts.
Yes, some people die. We know that, and my heart goes out to them. The idea is there's people there that shouldn't be there that was pushing the people forward.
So you don't blame President Trump for any of this?
I don't blame him, no.
Okay. All right. I thank you for your, you know, we are asking for thoughts, and you know, those are your thoughts, sir, and I do appreciate you taking the time to give us a call. Thank you very much. Let's go now back to the phones. I think we have Bart on the line from Newark. Hi, Bart.
Good morning, Mitch.
Good morning. And what's on your mind today?
My thought is very clear. Over the past 4 years of President Trump, because of his consistent lying to the American people, these lies are considered truths, and any truth has become and considered seditious. And it's a very dangerous situation that we have right in this country. And looking forward to the next 4 years of maybe a reversal of that, where truths, all right, are truths.
So you want to get back to an actual reality that we all share. I mean, I don't want to be glib about it, but I think I know what you're saying here. There seem to be sometimes, bizarrely, two sets of different realities. Somebody looking at one thing and seeing something that's obvious, and someone seeing something else. Is that what you mean?
Absolutely. Starting back, all right, where he claimed, all right, that the Muslims were cheering, all right, watching the World Trade Center come down.
That was a total lie.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Mitch. And I'm just want to repeat myself, all right? I'm looking forward to the next 4 years where truths are truths.
Well, Bart, let me just quickly ask you before I let you go, though. How do you think that will be accomplished? That is an awfully big ask, if you will, given the fractious nature of our country right now.
Well, yeah, it is an aspiration, all right? I think our country is based upon aspirations and hopes, and this is the one that I hope and aspire to, all right, that comes, all right, to total fruition.
Thank you very much for the call, Bart. Really appreciate that. We're hearing from some other folks this morning. Tim in Hinesburg sent us this note. I believe it was more than just a protest against an election result they didn't like. I think it's an indication of an anger that is growing in all of us to one degree or another by the machinations of Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi. We put them there. Allowing them to govern for 30, 40, or 50 years is wrong. Interesting thought there. Let's go to Amelia calling from Shoreham. Hi, Amelia. You're on the line.
Hi. I wanted to build off of the first caller's comments just about how, you know, we keep saying, oh, this isn't who we are. This isn't the America that I know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when we say that, we're kind of playing into this shock and awe that a lot of white people have had this year in general, sort of reacting to the realities of racism and violence in the United States. And I kind of want to caution us to be less shocked and awed, because when we do that, we're sort of erasing the reality of people of color who have known about violence and known about bigotry in this country their entire lives. So I think it's important to remember that, you know, what we are surprised by is just because of our personal lived experience and not necessarily, you know, the reality of the country as a whole.
Mel, you make a really interesting point. And again, I don't want to appear glib about this, but just hearing your words now reminds me of something that happened in what I saw on Saturday Night Live, the program after Trump was elected in 2016. They did a sketch that I thought was extremely telling. Dave Chappelle was the guest, and there were a lot of white people sitting around in the living room watching the television, watching the results come in and saying, this is the worst thing our country has ever done, you know, in electing Donald Trump. And then, you know, there was Dave Chappelle and another black actor on the show looking at each other and just kind of sharing a laugh, like, you've got to be kidding me. This is what we've been going through in this country for 400 years. Is that sort of what you're getting at here, that we should not be shocked and awed by this?
Yeah, I think that, like, so I'm a college student right now, and I've taken classes where we talk about race, and I know even myself, I've been prone to have reactions of like, oh my God, I didn't know, you know, it was so terrible in this way. And I've been trying to curb that impulse, because I think it hurts people to see that we aren't understanding how difficult this has been. And it's natural, I think, to an extent, if you've never experienced something before, to be shocked by something being horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But those reactions need to be more private in a way. We need to go through this shock more privately and not on such a national scale, even to, you know, Mr. Biden's speech during the violence, saying like, you know, this is not who we are. We're better than this. And, you know, maybe we can be better than this. But right now, this is who we are. And this is who we've been for a long time. And to try and deny that is again, an erasure of many people's lived experiences.
Yeah, and the key is what you said, Amelia. Maybe we can be better than this. Thank you very much for the call. Very appreciated. Let's go to Colby in Vernon. Hi, Colby. You're on the air.
Hi. Good to be here. My comment is that I'm really distressed with my family. They're all ardent Trump supporters. And, you know, we've all tried to keep it cordial over the last couple of years and had, you know, your typical family bouts and fights,
mm-hmm,
come holidays and such. But, you know, at this point, they're excited about what happened on Wednesday. They're happy to see it. They say this is democracy. And, you know, they moved from Fox News to Breitbart and everything. And so my thought is, and I'm trying to talk to my brother and cousin about this, you know, at what point do we draw a line in the sand and say, you know, you guys are not, it's not a political discussion anymore. It's the fate of democracy in our country, and it, you know, we can't accept it. And I don't, you know, honestly, I feel like I want to be like, I don't know how we can have a relationship together, as hard of a thing as that is to say, when you guys are supporting someone who's going against the standards of the United States.
Colby, that must be so difficult, but you're not alone. You know, I have talked to so many people who are having these same problems with relatives and even very good friends, and they're finding it so difficult to talk about this. I'm struck by something that you said, though. Your family said they were glad to see what happened. I mean, do they feel that way even knowing that five deaths resulted from what happened on Wednesday?
Unfortunately, the spin that happens on their news sources are saying that any extreme activity was from Antifa. So literally anything that could be negatively, you know, affect their opinion, any sort of truth that would damage their view of Trump and their ardent support for him can be explained away. And it's just, there's no discussing it. Yeah.
I'm really sorry. I don't know advice to give you on that. I could probably learn a few things from you on that. I mean, how have you been dealing with that when you hear that kind of thing that hurts you to the core? And knowing that the information that your relatives are getting is completely false, that was not Antifa at all. I mean, how do you deal with that?
Oh, man, it's extremely frustrating, and usually race tensions happen fast, and there's been quite a few fights in the family. But, I mean, I grew up in a Fox News house, and so I was reading Bill O'Reilly's books. I was listening to Rush Limbaugh, and I loved it all. I ate it all up. And it was only when I went to college at Champlain up in Burlington that I stopped watching the news and kind of dropped out of that suddenly I feel like I learned to think for myself. I mean, they thought I got brainwashed, but, I mean, I know what it's like to be in that world where you think that Democrats are trying to destroy the country and, you know, the whole deep state thing. I know what it's like to live there. And I just don't have any answer of how you can help people get out of it, really.
Well, Colby, I really hope things turn around there, and I hope someday you can break through that kind of misinformation and have a better relationship with your friends and loved ones. You're talking about your relatives here. Thank you very much for sharing your story with us. It's greatly appreciated. I'm Mitch Wertlieb on Vermont Public Radio, and this is an hour-long call-in special reflecting on the events on Wednesday in Washington, when hundreds, if not thousands, of pro-Trump extremists stormed the U.S. Capitol and disrupted the certification of Joe Biden as president-elect. Five people have now died after the siege of the People's House. In this hour, we are sharing our thoughts on what happened. How are you processing this insurrection? What are you feeling? What are you thinking? We do want to hear your thoughts. Call 800-639-2211 or send an email to share@vpr.org. First, though, we want to bring in a voice familiar to many Vermonters. Jim Douglas is a former three-term Republican governor of the state. Wanted to get his thoughts on the events, the actions of the president and other elected officials, and more. Governor Douglas, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, nice to be with you, Mitch.
So, I first thought out of the gate, what were you thinking, what were you feeling as you watched the events unfold on Wednesday?
Well, I couldn't believe it. It looked like a capital in Caracas or Minsk or somewhere other than the United States of America. I was appalled at the scene that unfolded on Wednesday. I think all Americans are or ought to be. I hope we can find a way forward that will turn this tragic episode into something positive. And already I've seen reports online of some Republican U.S. senators regretting not pushing back against the president earlier in his tenure. So maybe if they start working together in a more constructive way, then families like Colby's and other Americans can engage once again with people of different points of view.
Governor Douglas, have you been a supporter of President Trump?
I didn't support him. I didn't oppose him. I focused over the last 4 years on supporting Phil Scott in his races for governor and local candidates, but I stayed out of the presidential campaigns.
Well, that raises this question because Governor Phil Scott, as you know, has called for the, quote, resignation or removal of Trump from office. Do you agree with him or disagree?
I think we can probably survive another 12 days. If this were earlier in the term, it might be a more important discussion. The president now, after the joint session's decision, has acknowledged the outcome of the election and pledged a peaceful transition. So I hope that'll happen.
Well, to be fair, Governor, President Trump has said a lot of things over the 4 years he's been in office and has gone back on a lot of those pledges or promises or whatever you want to call them. I think the worry that some people have is, given what happened Wednesday, how shocking it was and how quickly it unfolded, those 12 days, other things could happen. I mean, if he remains president, he does still have the nuclear codes. I'm not saying he's going to start a war. I'm not saying this is going to happen. But can you envision a scenario where within these last 12 days, something happens that, as given the authority he has as president, could be irrevocable?
Well, we can always envision them, I suppose, but my guess is that a lot of his subordinates are not going to follow orders that they believe are inappropriate.
The Republican Party has changed significantly since Trump became president. Do you feel like it is still the Republican Party, or do you feel like it is the party of Trump?
Well, he's certainly been very dominant. After all, the president is the titular head of the party, no matter which party it happens to be. And we've seen over the last couple of years Republicans losing primary contests or having very difficult times when they have run afoul of him. So he's been a very dominant force. I think the question that a lot of us had was, would he be going forward? Would he continue to hold rallies? Would he actually run again in 4 years? But I think the episode that we saw this week will contribute to a less likely scenario along those lines. I think people understand now that he's not someone we want to be playing a major role in the party going forward. So I think in that strange way, it might have been helpful in terms of the Republican Party's future. At least I hope so.
Governor, I'd like to play some tape for you now, because our colleague John Dillon, the reporter here at VPR, pointed out that it was almost 20 years ago in May of 2001 when Vermont Senator Jim Jeffords, a lifelong Republican, stood before reporters in a hotel ballroom in Burlington and announced that he was leaving his party. Let's hear what he said then.
In order to best represent my state of Vermont, my own conscience and principles I have stood for my whole life, I will leave the Republican Party and become an independent.
That is former Republican Senator Jim Jeffords saying, in effect, that he didn't leave the Republican Party. The party left him. It's almost quaint now, isn't it, to think that Jeffords' principled stand was over disagreements with Republican education funding and policy under then-President George W. Bush. This crisis, Governor Douglas, and the Republican Party now, after what happened Wednesday, this seems far more profound. Is it time for some lifelong Republicans to leave the party?
Well, I hope not, because the party is the collection of those who adhere to it. And I regretted Jim Jeffords' decision nearly two decades ago. He knew that. And I said that it really weakens the centrism of our party when folks like Jim decide to leave. So I hope not. Everybody says that the president defines the party, and as I indicated, he is its titular head. But, Mitch, I've been a Republican for 70 years. Donald Trump's been a Republican for five. I don't accept the notion that he defines our party. So I think it's more important than ever that people who have been Republicans and those who whom we can attract to our ranks continue to grow the Republican Party so we can have a strong two-party system in our country. Another point I'd make is that what you've asked really points out the increasing polarization of the nation. I'm very concerned about this. Blue states are getting bluer, red states are getting redder, and that contributes to the divisiveness and polarization that we're experiencing. So I think everybody should take a deep breath and see if we can move past this and get back to the kind of more collegial lawmaking and politics that we've known at points in our past.
That is former Vermont Governor Jim Douglas. I want to thank you so much for the time. Thanks for speaking with us. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Mitch.
All right. We are still taking your phone calls this hour, a special hour of your thoughts, your feelings about what happened on Wednesday. And we have Janet on the line now from Randolph Center. Hi, Janet.
Hey, wow, thank you. You must be inundated. I appreciate it. I, like millions of other Americans, was absolutely appalled by what I saw yesterday, especially with what ease it was able to happen. And so I have two short-term major fears. One is the inauguration. I mean, these people are going to be appeased by comments by Trump saying, oh, you know, sorry, whatever. But I worry about what's going to happen there if the forces are prepared enough to prevent anything from happening there. And also, I think if the 25th Amendment were used or impeachment, I'm afraid that would also inflame the other side enough that Biden would have some problems going forward with the division of us here in the States.
That's an interesting thought, Janet, because it seems like you're reflecting what Governor Douglas just said, which is that there's 12 days left for Trump in office. Let's let that play out and kind of hope that nothing bad happens. I mean, are you at all worried that, you know, he could do something in a fit of pique or, you know, some kind of feeling of grievance again to do something that could really damage the country?
I absolutely am. I lived in Europe for quite a number of years, and I was in touch with a lot of my friends this week, and they're also just, you know, appalled and worried about what else can he do, especially with Iran and, you know, who knows what else. And, you know, he keeps chipping away at even I just heard recently he killed the Endangered Species Act. And, you know, just willy-nilly, let's do what we can to make everything harder for Biden. But maybe he can also do some really terrible damage.
Well, Janet, thank you very much for the call. It's greatly appreciated. We heard from Kit in Burlington, who wrote in and said, what we watched Wednesday is scary. It is also a sign that deep systemic change is now possible. Change around health care for all, around anti-racism, around fair taxation. This level of change has not been possible in my 74 years of life, she says. Let's pull together and work towards deep systemic reforms. Let's go back to the phones now. We have Daniel on the line from Fairley. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. Americans really forget really quick. Trump, several years ago, boasted live on TV that he could walk down the street, shoot somebody, and get away with it. And here we are, several years later. He's essentially incited a riot. Five people have died, and he's going to get away with it.
When you say get away with it, Daniel, what would you like to see happen?
Well, I don't think having his cabinet take over is going to be very good because there's a lot of complications with that. One is he can dispute it, which could take 12 days. Who knows what he could do in between there. He's at Camp David right now. Just keep him there. Keep him there, keep all the electronic devices away from him, and just sequester him. I know it's radical, but he's very dangerous, and we've been saying that for years and years and years, and everybody has ignored it. You can go back on any clip that he's done on TV. He's lied, created falsehoods, and he has brought us to a point where people are willing to go into our Capitol, as I heard this morning, key in offices, walk out with podiums, and just destroy our culture. So let's do something. I hope Biden isn't spineless, because I feel like he's going to be the good old boy that's just going to want to bring everybody together. Nah, this guy has to be crushed.
Well, if everything holds, he will be leaving office in 12 days' time, and he will not be president anymore. Daniel, thank you very much for the call. Do appreciate it. We heard from a veteran, Thomas, who wrote us and said, as a very proud U.S. Marine Corps veteran, it saddens me to view what Trump has built, nurtured, and brought upon this country. I think reflecting a little bit of what Daniel was just saying there. Let's go to Tyler in Montpelier. Tyler, hi, you're on the line now.
Hi, Mitch. Thanks for taking this call.
Sure.
Really appreciate it.
You bet.
So essentially, the point that I wanted to make or kind of interject is that, like many of the listeners before me have said that, you know, history repeats itself. There are many examples, such as in so-called banana republics and third world countries, but in particularly with the rise of fascism in Nazi Germany, in pre-Nazi Germany between 1918 and 1933, there was a coup try to stage by Hitler when he lost the election for the chancellorship or for the basically the Senate in Germany. And the similarities are so incredibly strong in these moments where, you know, essentially what we have, though, is back then that represented a true movement that was united. I hate to say about the Nazis. What we have now with Trump are people who are essentially trolls trolling online who then come out in a very small number. So there's no true counterforce on either side between Trump or even the liberals at this point in this country. There's no counterforce against the tide of fascism, which has kind of come from Europe into America after World War II.
Do you feel any hope at all, though, Tyler, that, you know, even though there were those 74 million folks who did vote for Trump, there were 81 million who voted for Joe Biden, and we have to believe were motivated not so much by their love for Joe Biden, but for wanting to get Donald Trump out of office?
Well, indeed, Mitch, I do have quite a bit of hope. The night before last, actually, when all this went down, when it was actually happening live during the day, I had the inclination to put on the 1972 debate of Noam Chomsky versus Michel Foucault. And I do believe, like Chomsky, that human nature has an innate creativity and an ability to change and transform and to create off of existing paradigms to create a better world, which I think we're in the midst of right now. I voted for Biden.
Well, that's...
He has to be part of the change. Voting is not voting, is voting for the system. Everything you do is an action.
I think
a ripple effect.
I'm sorry to interrupt there, Tyler. We do have to go to a break, but I think you make an excellent point that the vote, the power of the vote, as we have seen around the country, as we saw in the Senate races in Georgia, is still so very important. It is still such a way for people's voices to be heard. I thank you very much for the call. We're doing a kind of insurrection reflection, if you will, here on Vermont Public Radio this morning. I'm Mitch Wertley. We are reflecting on the events of Wednesday when pro-Trump extremists stormed the nation's capital. What were you thinking? What questions might you have? How are you talking about this with loved ones, with neighbors? We heard from Dwayne, who said the voices calling for President Trump's immediate removal ought to think carefully about whether such an action would further inflame the forces of partisanship and division. President Trump needs to be held accountable for his actions, says Dwayne, but this should be done in a measured and thoughtful way. Future months will provide opportunity for a considered approach. Let's go back to the phone lines. Tina is on the line from Putney. Hi, Tina.
Hi. Thanks a lot for this opportunity.
Sure.
I think we have to look at things systemically at this point. We have privatized so much of our commons. We've allowed, over the last 50, 60 years, I mean, way back since Reagan declared ketchup a vegetable, we have undereducated our children. We have nutritionally abandoned them. We have allowed the oligarchs to dominate our economic systems. We have outsourced jobs. We have we've just crumbled our infrastructure. We've been negligent. And this has all happened slowly in an erosion kind of way. And we have to really look at ourselves. You know, we have to take a sort of a socio-political inventory of our own decisions and how we've, you know, Trump is a phenomenon and a culmination. And if it wasn't him, it probably would have been someone else because it's how things have moved in the world. The oligarchs have no allegiance to any country anymore. They live in, you know, wealthytopia. They are living in bubbles. They get to do what they want. The Bezos, the super wealthy, they make the money off the blood, sweat, and tears of the average people. And we've actually allowed it. We've actually done some voluntary servitude. We've given up our power. And this is a culmination. You neglect people long enough, this is what happens.
It sounds like you're saying that the systemic problems in this country led up to President Trump. He did not just appear out of nowhere. Tina, thank you for the call. I do appreciate that. Let's go to Phil in Rutland. Phil is on the line. Hi, Phil.
Yes, sir. Good morning. Last night, my daughter sent us an Instagram video, and it appears to be somewhere between where the president got the protesters stoked up for violence to go down to the Capitol. He's inside of a huge, what appears to be a huge tent or some sort of thing to keep him out of the elements. He was in there with his two sons, the girlfriend, with Melania. Oh, not Melania, but the president's daughter, the tall blonde, I can't think of her name.
Ivanka Trump, yeah.
But they were, Ivanka, and they're watching all this unfold on huge monitors inside this tent, and they were just in glee watching all this destruction and violence. They knew what was going on. He stoked them up, and he said, I'm going to march down there with you, but he never went with them. He stayed out of sight because he was afraid he might get hurt. Who knows? But, I mean, he knew exactly what he was doing when he stoked them up. He knew what was going to happen. And I'm hoping that they keep him in office until the end and don't let Pence get in, because then Pence will be pressured to give him a pardon. And I hope there's no way that he can be pardon himself or be pardoned or his children be pardoned, because they're all in this together. They're a terrible bunch of people.
So, Phil, my guess is that the latest video that the president put out last night, where he said that he was outraged at what he saw and that, you know, those who took part will be, you know, will pay for it. You're not buying that.
No, because he it's just the opposite. He stoked them all up. They loved every minute of it. They were watching it. They were on these giant monitors. They watched it. They loved it. Now he's just trying to save his rear end with his speech last night. I'm 73 years old. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I've been a Republican all my life. I've never voted for Trump on either election. He's not a Republican.
Phil, I thank you for your service, and I thank you for your phone call. Thank you very much. We heard from Marie in Burlington, who emailed us and said, I am revolted by the events in the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday. I am embarrassed by the example this country has set on a global scale, the double standard and hypocrisy that so-called patriots can attack our democratic process and not be held accountable is shameful. Those are the thoughts of Marie in Burlington, who sent us an email. And we still have time to take a few phone calls. Let's go to Tim in Barrie. Hi, Tim.
Yes. Hi, Mitch. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Mitch, I just wanted to point out that, you know, I don't have a whole lot to say, but I would say that what we're seeing is a complete and utter display of mental illness. And if people don't see that, you know, I'm not sure exactly what to tell them other than maybe they need to get some help themselves. But if Trump isn't mentally ill, then I'm not living on Earth.
Well, Tim, you know who would agree with you? I'm sorry to break in here, but who would agree with you is hundreds of mental health professionals who signed letters and said that they felt that they what they were seeing from President Trump's actions, not just what happened Wednesday, was that this was a mentally ill individual. And there are some calls from people who are saying now that we should start listening not just about Trump, but in the future. To get mental health professionals to take them seriously when they say these kind of things. I mean, those kind of pronouncements were very much ignored.
I agree, Mitch. I appreciate that. The other thing I'd say is that we need to be careful and we need to be mindful, because the mentally ill have a unique way of manipulating. And,
well, also, Tim, I'm sorry to break in. I don't want to stigmatize people with mental illness either. It's very important that we don't do that.
I completely agree.
Okay, yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying in context here with President Trump. I'm not qualified to say whether or not he is mentally ill. I would say that the actions on Wednesday certainly point to a serious problem with what he did in inciting that violence. And I do thank you for the call, Tim. I want to get to Crystal, who's on the line from Winooski. Hi, Crystal.
Hi. Good morning. And first
morning.
Of all, I want to say condolences to the five people that lost their lives and people that have lost their lives during this pandemic. It's just been really hard. But what I heard, I didn't see it, but I heard it on the news and everything. The storming of the Capitol and everything. It's just, I wasn't surprised. And I told my mom this. It's like, I wasn't surprised the way our president has been basically holding himself has been just wrong. And I agree with everything that has been mentioned. The mere fact that America, and this is not how you make America good again by any means, but I do believe that there's a lot of stress. There's job losses. There's been job losses even before the pandemic. The constant kind of like bringing our like economic overseas has contributed. I see it when I go shopping sometimes for stuff where our U.S. made products is about three times the price of foreign products. It just it kills me because I'm American and I would rather like buy my own products, but you know I can't afford it.
Yeah,
and I'm living in America.
I think a lot of people share those same concerns. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go one more phone call. Rick in South Burlington. Hi, Rick.
Hello, Mitch, and good morning.
Good morning, and Rick, I have to before you start, we're short on time, so I'm going to ask you to be brief. I'm sorry.
The way forward, I think, is from all this mayhem, is that it's time to strengthen our democracy. By that, I mean we have to take specific steps to change and improve, reform the structure and the financing of how our political system works. It is driving right now the way it's organized, this partisanship and division. And it's a perfect time for us to look forward. There are already measures in Congress, H.R. 1, that would not perfectly fix it, would go a long way. It was passed by the House, not taken up seriously in the Senate. That would be a start, but there's much more we can do in this regard.
And briefly, what do you think needs to be done to get people from just locking horns all the time?
Okay. We need to encourage our government to equally serve the interests of all its citizens. That has eroded due to the structure and financing of our political system. It's wrong. It's not what was envisioned when we founded our country, and it's time to address it. And there's lots of detail behind this, obviously, but in a short summary, that's it.
Well, Rick, I do appreciate your phone call and your thoughts and certainly your hopes for a better future for all of us. Thank you very much for that phone call. We are out of time. That hour flew by very quickly, extraordinarily. I just want to thank you, everybody who has called in today. Everybody we didn't get to, I'm sorry. We do encourage you to write your thoughts to us at share@vpr.org. It's been an extraordinary 48 hours, some would say an extraordinary 4 years, and we're going to see what happens coming up in these next 12 days, of course, and we'll follow it all for you on VPR News. So that does it for this hour. Thanks again to everybody who called. Today's show was possible thanks to director James Stewart. Our call screener was Kelly DeLaurier. Our producer was Matthew Smith. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Thank you so much for listening and sharing in this conversation. We continue that conversation with you, and we'll follow the entire story together here on Vermont Public Radio. Thank you so much, everyone, for your time, and let's hope for better days ahead.